Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LeDuc. For over 25 years, Cochemea has built a career as a saxophone soloist and section player and composer, arranger, collaborating with artists across genres. From his long tenure with Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings to work with Kevin Morby, Run the Jewels, John Batiste, Amy Winehouse, The Roots, Archie Shepp, Mark Ronson, and Quincy Jones, among many others. Cochemea's most recent album on Daptone Records, Volume 3, Ancestros Futuros, is the third volume in a series that includes All My Relations and Volume 2, Baka Sewa. Across this body of work, Cochemea engages with time as a speculative history and present reflection. He draws on his indigenous background and his dreams to create a chronicle that moves fluidly between memory and possibility. Cochemea is playing two shows in our region, the first on Friday at Tubby's in Kingston, New York, and the second in Mass Mocha's Club B10 in North Adams, Massachusetts. That's on Saturday. Again, the name of the most recent album is Volume 3, Ancestros Futuros, and Cochemea joins us now. Welcome to the Roundtable. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
I would like, if you don't mind, a lesson on your familial culture and how it was celebrated and your upbringing, how long it has meant so much to you and what people could know about it or you would like people to know about it in order to maybe more fully enjoy the sonic expression of it.
My name is actually Yaqui, and my Yaqui ancestry comes from my paternal side. So my father passed away when I was really young. My mother is also Native, mixed Native ancestry. But since I had a Yaqui name, I grew up with this just a sense of I was carrying something, even though I didn't know my father. But I, as it would happen, I got reunited with my dad's side of the family in my early 20s. And that started a whole chain of events. And I grew very close and still remain close to my dad's side of the family to this day. So he was a very monumental figure in the family. He's an artist, a sculptor, a jazz guitar player, and he just touched a lot of people. And I grew up with his art around the house. So I think that part of my musical and artistic journey, at least with this body of work, has been a way to sort of I guess make sense of some of these oral histories and these ancestral memories that often come in these fragmented pieces, right? And it's a way of making them whole, but also recontextualizing them, because you know you're often only hearing one side of the story, and then you also intuit things. So for me, the using music as the vehicle and now image, I think it's been a way for me to not only honor my ancestors, also listen to my ancestors, and carry whatever messages they might have forward, hopefully. And so a lot of that is reflected either overtly or subtly in the art and music that I make.
You said you reconnected with your dad's family in your early 20s, which is a very developmental and impressionable time in a person's life, I think. It's also a headstrong, here I go kind of era of life for a lot of people, depending. Did you know something monumental was happening that would impact your future art when you reconnected with your dad's family?
I don't know if I really connected it to art at that time. I think it was more just it's just life, you know, and because I had grown up hearing all these stories about my dad through my mom. She was really my only connection. But it turned out that my dad's family was we're all living in the same town. It's just that we weren't really connected. And here and there, like my uncle and some other people from my dad's family would reach out. In fact, my auntie reached out to me. She found me in the Yellow Pages. And that's, well, because my cousin, Anthony, who actually we ended up, you know, as time kind of goes forward and backward, we ended up collaborating on my previous record, Volume 2. He composed the title track. and I had them in the studio. So many things have come full circle, and so, but I didn't really connect it to the art. But I think that it was working in me. Something was working on me. I would say several years before even I started this work, there was something that was calling me. And so it was like, how is it going to express itself? And then there was just a flashpoint moment where it just all came together, and I realized, oh, this is what it's going to be. And then it kind of, in a lot of ways, wrote itself.
The volume two, the title track you just mentioned, Baka Sewa, there's two versions of that song on the record, a chant version and then the like reimagined interpolated horn version. They're just gorgeous. How did you realize that you wanted to present them that way as two separate versions?
Well, I'm really inspired by the work of Jim Pepper, the late great Jim Pepper, a great native saxophone player, musician. And he often would take a lot of the peyote chants that he learned from his grandfather, and he would interpolate them into these other songs that would also like meld kind of gospel type chord changes or and with jazz chord changes. And the first time I heard his music, the great drummer Hamid Drake turned me on to his music. And the first time I heard it, I just was so overcome with emotion. It was kind of like, you know, that feeling when the sound you've been searching for just suddenly is there and you didn't know it. So I just kind of devoured his music, and I was really inspired by like a famous song of his, Wichitaito, starts with the what you might say chant version, and then it goes right into like the reimagined song version. So it's really an homage to Jim Pepper, but it's also an homage to my family, just kind of using that structure as the vehicle. And the way that came about is I that song Baka Sewa, which is our pre-colonial last name, is our family song, and that's just really how my cousin refers to it. This is our family song, and he composed the melody while on a fishing trip with his son, and then it just became like our song. And at family gatherings, you know, we would sing it, and it just, I thought, you know, wow, it would be really, I wonder if, you know, I asked him, would you be comfortable with me, you know, I asked his permission, can I use your melody and interpret it and kind of as an instrumental song, and he gave me his blessing. And then I went one step further, and I said, "Well, why would you want to come and, you know, sing it actually on the record?" So he came, Anthony came, my cousins came, his son came, who he actually wrote the song for. And so we have these generations of our family together, plus members of the singing group actually singing this song. And the drum he made, the actual drum, which was honoring his father, my uncle, who had passed away some years earlier. So it is really in that way, it was connecting all of our ancestors and kind of part of a larger story.
Which is what you are doing with these albums, with this music, kind of on the whole, as a part of a, you know, an umbrella mission is to connect through nonlinear time all of your ancestors and descendants and family. Volume three, Ancestros Futuros. How did you know it was ready to be released? How do you realize that what you've been dreaming up and working on with your compatriots, your bandmates, how do you know when it's ready to be released?
Oh, what a great question. Well, the way we make our records is we have a finite amount of time to make them.
Ah, that helps. That helps.
Yeah, there's a, you know, it's a destination. You know, everyone flew in from New York to the West Coast to Penrose Recorders. And so we had a week to cut the tracks. You know, there's preparation involved before that. You know, we you know, demo the songs, flesh them out, arrange them somewhat, but we also, you know, I really make it a point not to over arrange or over compose songs. I want the, you know, the meat and potatoes there, but I really this is a very collaborative process between me and my producer Bosco Mann and also the band, because everyone has a brings a wealth of knowledge and their own personalities and perspectives. So I want them to also contribute. And it always makes things better, you know, when you collaborate. But there's just so much deep trust between all of us. We've been playing for years, and it's generally pretty much the same crew that's been on all these records and that also plays with me live for the most part. So once we are all in the room and we agree on an arrangement, we cut it, move on. And then I have, we, which is not typically done, that you go straight into mixing after you record, but that's what we do. So it's really a document of a time and place, you know. It's like we record, we go straight to mixing, and then you're just kind of living in that world. But then from there, it's the second part happens, and that's kind of the threading together of all the different songs and the story. And so for me, there's two aspects of all of these records, really, which is there's the music, which has an intention and has a story that's kind of written into the fabric of the songs, but also there's the sort of tangible, like conceptual kind of container that it's in. And that involves the artwork, the titles, the song titles. Those are all to me portals into like the music. So that's the process that happens after. I mean, it's kind of happening all along. Some of the tunes I kind of already have an idea, but it really starts to organize itself kind of post, at least in all its fullness. So when I know it's done is when I have kind of like the picture in my mind of what the story is. You know, what's the narrative? Like, it's kind of like a film. You know, I you know, some people see music as in colors, and I really see it in images. So a lot of times things come to me visually. So it's like if I can visualize everything, you know, then that's when I feel it's done.
And you did create a visual partner component of this project. How did you decide to do that, and what was the work involved in creating that?
You know, the kind of anchors of anchor sort of ideas and concepts of this album were there from the very beginning. I just imagined this sort of future ancestor, this character you might say, and so a lot of the songs were kind of written from that perspective, sort of a future ancestor looking back, and sort of this kind of like play between the collapsing of time and how this kind of like idea of circular time, but also like it all happening all at once. So I was just playing with that idea, but also embedded within that is survival across generations as a continuum. I had already sort of had a vision of what this future ancestor looked like, and that ended up being on the cover, manifested. But I also knew that I wanted to make a visual piece. I had started making short films in the lead up prior to the album, and I really wanted to make a visual companion. You know, I felt like it was time to, you know, I wanted to make something that supported the album but also could kind of stand alone, and also kind of like the concepts to kind of layer them within this visual sphere. So that's really how it came about. And the film has the two opening tracks. We also went a step further and mixed it in Dolby Atmos, so there's this immersive surround sound quality. So the next step is really finding venues to screen it, because I think that's kind of the other experience of the album is to actually be in a room in a screen and to hear the sound just envelop you.
Are visual elements, any of the visual elements, a part of your touring shows, or is there not a screen capacity at the spots you're playing?
Yeah, actually, for our, I didn't play the actual film in its entirety, but I re-edited a lot of the imagery. So on our, because it's a short film, it's you know, I think 11 minutes. So we'll be doing visuals for the Mass Mocha show coming up.
That
and
makes
we also,
sense.
Yeah, and we also did it for our National Sawdust show, which was our record release. It's just such a fantastic venue, and they're so great there. And but it was a perfect place to be able to, and the screen is situated perfectly behind the stage. So in terms of like the band and the screen, they all really visually went well together, I think.
Cochemea is playing at Tubby's in Kingston, New York on Friday, and at Mass Mocha in North Adams, Massachusetts on Saturday. You mentioned your producer, Bosco Mann, who you've worked with at least since Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. You spoke to this a bit already, but how does the relationship developed over the years? What does that partnership mean to you?
Wow. Well, I mean, I honestly couldn't even consider making a record like we're making with anybody else. It's just, there's just so much trust. You know, he really approached me, which I think in a way sort of surprised me at the time. This is going back many years ago, but, you know, I had been, you know, playing in the band for a long time. And so we just really developed a relationship through Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, you know, traveling together, living together, making records together with the band and just being on a tour bus. Listening to music. I mean, that was a really big bonding experience for everyone in the band. I mean, we used to actually have a turntable in the back of the bus, and every city we would go, just as soon as we landed, it was like, what record store are we going to? Everyone would just come back with all the gems that they picked up that day, and we would just listen to records before and after the show.
How was the record player stabilized in the van, in the bus? Was it okay when you were moving, or did you have to be parked?
Well, you have to be parked. You can't play while it's moving. So we had developed a friendship and as well as a working relationship, you know, over the years. But you know, on one of the last Sharon tours, we were just in the back lounge listening to music, and he just turned to me and he said, "Let's make a record. We should make a record." And I was like, "Wow!" And we kind of like, you know, flirted with that idea before, but the way he said it that time felt like it was a serious proposal. So then we just started talking about music, and he really you know, in so many respects just guided me and really encouraged me, and has always supported just my voice, you know, like whenever I come to even like some very some ideas that I would consider pretty abstract, you know, he's always down to just like explore the ideas and really and make them better. And just even speaking on just the purely sonic level of his engineering and mixing, you know, it's just to me unequaled. So yeah, he's just a dear friend as well.
You record to tape with him, right?
Yeah, we record to tape. And then, you know, it's not, you know, a lot of people talk about recording to tape as kind of like an aesthetic choice, which I suppose in some way it is, but it's also it's just a methodology of working that really serves the music, because you know, you can't like with Pro Tools or whatever, you just really have the luxury of being able to constantly overdub. You have an infinite number of tracks, and you know, we record to an 8-track Ampex machine, so you have 8 tracks to do your thing. And so the bottom line is you have to make decisions and you have to commit and you have to get the performance. We're all in the room together, so all of these takes are all live performances, you know. So I think that's also an important piece in terms of how the music is made, because I think sometimes you have in the back of your mind, oh, well, I can just redo it. It's like you have to get it. And then that captures a moment and it captures the spirit and the feeling of the performance.
Is volume 3 the final installment of a trilogy or not, or do we know?
It's kind of open-ended. You know, I always feel a little uncomfortable with closing things, you know, like a finality. I think there's a natural sort of a, you know, idea of a final in a trilogy that, well, that's that. But I think that it's more of giving myself permission to take a beat from this particular story and this particular universe, and to give myself permission to do something else. But there is a through line through all my work. So it'll just express itself in a different way. You know, maybe it's not, you know, with four percussion players. Or maybe it is, you know, I really want to revisit, you know, I have so much love for this band and all the people in it and the music we make. So I would say that it's not the end, but I think it's more like it's a document of a certain story, a certain place and time, and it will continue in some other story or some other universe.
It's so interesting that you just used the word document, because my next question was going to be, the album came out a few months ago, September, and is the document that you all made decisions on and put out, but it's jazz and you're going on the road. How does your relationship or understanding or feeling about and toward the music change over the last few months since the record came out?
Wow, it continues to reveal itself. You know, that's what's interesting. And I mean, I even hear different things in the music when I go back and listen to it. But it can I think that I continue to find new ways to play the songs. You know, because a lot of times, you know, some bands do things differently. Sometimes they road test the songs and then they get in the studio and they record them. You know, they've spent months on the road kind of like fine-tuning them and audiences. We do it differently. The music's composed and then we go and the first time we really get it right is in the studio. And then we take it to the stage. So I'm finding that it's a discovery process as it moves on in terms of like how I approach the music, even like the little tweaks we make with the band. Or even the possibilities of what the music can be and how. And then of course there's the synergy that happens with an audience, because that's like how it affects people and the energy that they give to us and how the energetic exchange that happens. It's a beautiful thing. So I would say that I think it keeps I keep learning. I keep learning through the music.
Making the three records in the last, I'm looking at about 7 years, give or take, at least from release dates, they each had their own, story that you conceived of and told and put out. But I believe, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, obviously, you're playing songs from all of them on the tour. You're not just playing the current one. How do you
Correct.
build your set list so that the stories come together?
That's interesting. Well, there's different ways to, you know, I think lately what I've been doing is just kind of playing the new stuff up front. It's just kind of like, you know, this is the tour and then kind of present in a sort of block form the new material rather than kind of intersperse it. I think as I go along, that might naturally happen. And then, you know, I learned this from Gabe, you know, with the Dap Kings. He really had an interesting, you know, a lot of times people make set lists and he would just change it every night, but the beginning would be the same. So you never kind of knew what you would get. And I thought that was really interesting. It really kept everyone on their toes.
Sure.
But there's, you know, I think a lot of times it's kind of like I arrange the music kind of in terms of mood, and kind of like how I want things to sort of fit together and just kind of what sounds good together. But it's a very malleable thing, you know. You can't really, at least I can't really know how it's going to work. I can imagine, but not until you actually do it can I tell. And so then you can kind of make little tweaks here and there. It's a really fun process, you know. You're kind of like moving pieces over, you know, around a board a little bit.
The latest record is Volume 3, Ancestros Futuros, and it has been really very cool to get to talk to you. I'm so grateful for your time and appreciate your music and your playing throughout the years.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
Cochemea is playing at Tubby's in Kingston, New York on Friday, and at Mass Mocha in North Adams, Massachusetts on Saturday. The latest album is Volume 3, Ancestros Futuros. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable.